History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We've learned they don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to do something about it. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. When you reach the century mark, there isn't too much you haven't seen, but a special moment at the Veterans Memorial Museum in Fresno, California this last week proved you're never too old for surprises. March 6th was birthday number 100 for Ray Lee, one of the few remaining Chinese-American veterans of World War II, and I'm going to let him tell you what happened.
We had quite a few people that came down to the museum, and it was quite a surprise for me. My kids said, "We're going to go eat at a Chinese restaurant." I said, "Okay, I'll go." So we head downtown, and I know something funny. They're not going to the restaurant. They're going to the museum. I said, "I don't know what's going on." So we got out of the car. We parked the car. We got out. I walked in the museum, and there were a bunch of people in there. And I looked around. All the tables all set. I said, "They pulled a trick on me." And all the people was walking around. And, I knew something was up. And I knew something was going to happen. So we sat down, we had dinner there. We had a few discussions. I had a few words to say. They want me to say a few words. I'm not much of a public speaker, but I did what I was supposed to. Anyhow, they had the TV people there. I think it was Channel 30. They were pretty nice people. They took my picture of me and all this stuff, and I was kind of shy. I didn't want to say too much. So I sat down, we had dinner. It was a pretty nice dinner, and we enjoyed it.
Did they at least get you Chinese food?
Oh, I missed my Chinese food. That's what we were supposed to go to a Chinese restaurant, and they turned around and went to the museum. I said, "Something's funny."
How did that make you feel?
Oh, I feel pretty good. Surprise. Mm-hmm. Quite a shock. Anyhow, we had a good time. All my old friends were there, and I was glad to see them. It was a pretty good-sized crowd, and we had our dinner, dessert. Then we left the museum around about 9:30 or 10 o'clock. They shut it down, so we went home. It was a nice affair we had. I was really surprised.
Did all the attention and being at the museum make you think about your Army days at all?
Yeah, it kind of brings back memory. I have a few things I kind of remember, but I don't want to say anything about it. I was classified as a medic. My number was 861 classification. I did my duty in Europe and Japan. It was interesting. From what I see, these young kids, they should be more educated in our world about the, what we went through. These kids nowadays, they don't understand what we had to do. But as we were young, we see a lot of things that these kids have not seen before, and we don't talk about it. Especially among the younger kids. We, as a veteran, we understand each other. We talk about it once in a while. But it was a good experience to see things.
And Ray did tell us some of those stories almost 5 years ago when we sat down at that same museum where he spent more than a quarter of his life volunteering. He took us back to his childhood. After his mother left the family to pursue an acting career, Ray, his brother, and their two sisters were raised by their grandmother, who had immigrated to the U.S. from China.
Grandma took care of us when we were kids, and she was really strict, disciplined us, and we had chores to do to keep us out of trouble. In fact, we lived in Fresno for quite a few years till we were able to move over to Kalingo. My dad had a restaurant over there, so we went over there, stayed over there, and started my schooling there, and graduated from high school in 42.
What was it like here in Fresno in the 20s and 30s?
Well, the population was small, and it wasn't congested like it is now. You've been able to get around. People were more friendlier, and we kept to ourselves, and we lived in Germantown. We had a lot of German friends we had, and my landlord was German. We rented a house from them. It was $18 a month. That was a lot of money in those days, yeah, and it was quite an experience.
Well, and I've heard some stories about Chinatown back in the day. Do you have any memories of Fresno's Chinatown?
Yes, I do. I went to Chinese school. My grandma insists that we all go to Chinese school to learn the language. And I went to two schools, one on G Street between Mariposa and Tulare on G Street. That was an old brick building. It was kind of a spooky place. It's a really spooky old building. Yeah, that we had most of the Chinese kids going to school there. And I had one rough teacher. He was a mean son of a gun. I never forget him. Yeah.
Well, I heard you say the word spooky, and I'm reminded of some of the stories I've heard that the people talk about tunnels underneath Chinatown, and maybe some of those are haunted. Did you ever see or hear any of that?
I never seen a tunnel, but I've been in the China Alley. It's a spooky old place between Tulare and Mariposa Street. That's where the old Chinese school, and it was a spooky old building. It's all these buildings all run down, and a lot of these Chinese family had no place to go, but they had to live in those old brick buildings. It was pretty rough.
Sometimes people remember this and sometimes they don't, but I'm always curious, if you think back to when you were that boy growing up, did you have some dreams or some ambitions or those thoughts, hey, when I grow up, here's what I'm going to do?
No, we didn't have anything like that. The only thing we had in mind, we were supposed to learn the language and behave ourselves and try and get ahead in our education. That was taught by our grandparents. They insist that we all go to school, learn the language, and try to prove to the people that you are somebody. Make something out of your life.
In Fresno, in this area at the time, did you feel that you were treated any differently because you were Chinese?
Yes, we had a segregation. Southern Pacific Railroad track, that was the line that we cannot cross. And I go over that Southern Pacific. That was it. We were supposed to stay in that boundary line.
What would happen if you didn't?
People would ask, what are you doing over here? Get back over there on the west side. We didn't want to argue with it, so we just turn around and go back.
Did that bother you at all at the time, or was that just the way life was?
Well, it kind of set me off. And then when I was a kid, it kind of set me off. But I always have the memory of that, not to go beyond the Southern Pacific Railroad track. And finally, after the war, things loosened up, and we were allowed to go across that track, go to the theater over there, the Warner Brothers, Wilson, Kinema, and the Hardy, and the Fulton Street Theater. There's quite a few of them over there.
And how old were you when you moved from Fresno to Kalinga?
Oh, I was about 14, 15 years old when I moved over to Kalinga.
And that changed your life a little bit, it sounds like, huh?
Yes, it did. We had no hardly any Oriental student over there. We had mostly the white kids. We got along real fine. Some of those kids are one of my best friends. We had made a lot of good friends over there. Yeah, they were down to earth.
The history of Kalinga was that it was a big oil town, right? And your dad had a Chinese restaurant there?
Yes, he did. He had the first Chinese restaurant there. We had it in the Buckley Hotel. And down below used to be a bar. And it was a vacant place, so my dad happened to talk to the landlord, and she rented an office to us, the half of the building, upstairs and downstairs. It was interesting, yeah.
What was the restaurant called?
It was called the China Cafe. My dad, he used to run those kids out, you know, the high school kids used to come in and raise hell on a Saturday night. My dad used to go out to the front dining room and tell them to calm down or get the heck out of that place here. They respected my dad, because my dad was quite a fighter. He was a very athletic type of a gentleman. Mm-hmm. He was a fighter.
And did all four of you kids have to work in the restaurant?
Yes, we did. That kept us out of trouble. We had to finish up schooling, and we come after school, we'd go down to the restaurant to work till about 8, 9 o'clock. Then we'd go home.
So what'd you have to do at the restaurant?
Well, we had to peel the vegetable, onion, dry onion, a green onion. We stand on a soapbox on top of a sink and wash dishes, and sweep the floor, mop the floor, clean the latrine, and stuff like that. We had odds and ends, a lot of work to do in the restaurant. You fill up the salt, pepper, fill up the napkin dispenser. We had a lot of things to do. We couldn't mess around. My dad was watching us, and we had to do what he tells us to do.
And so Kalinga High School at the time, sounds like your family were some of the only Asian faces there?
We had about two Asian family beside ourselves, one Korean and two Chinese family. Two of them was running a grocery store, and one Korean family working out in the oil field, Standard 25D, and that was about it.
Well, you told me your class of 1942, so that tells me that your senior year at Kalinga High School, the world changed a little bit. Do you remember December 7th, 1941?
You better believe it. Me and my dad was going down to the restaurant. We were riding in this vehicle, and then we got to the back alley. We pulled in, and our neighbor next door, he had a dry cleaning establishment, and he hollered over the fence that Pearl Harbor had been attacked by the Japanese. And we didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. I said, "Where's Pearl Harbor?" My dad said, "I don't know." He asked me, "Do you know where it is?" I said, "No, I don't." So we had the radio going on all night and found out it was in Hawaii. And it was quite a shock, yeah. And then we was thinking, geez, we're going to have to get involved in this, which we did.
Well, and what was it like at school the next day?
Everybody knew about Pearl Harbor. Everybody was in a state of shock. And we had several high school students that graduated before our class did. They were in the military. Some of them were lost in Corregidor and when they got overrun by the Japanese in the Philippines.
So you knew some of those guys?
Yes. They used to come in the restaurant all the time. We'd get to know them. And then they all enlisted in the Army. Some went in the Signal Corps, and some went in the regular department. And we all knew that they were all in the Pacific, in the Philippines, and they were all taken prisoner, or we didn't know what happened to them.
So they could have been on the Bataan Death March?
Yeah, they could have. We never heard from them anymore. There was quite a few people missing from Kalinga, quite a casualty from Kalinga.
Have you ever found out anything more over the years about what happened to him?
No, I didn't. Since then, we moved out of Kalinga, so we lost track of those gentlemen. One was a Mice. I forgot his first name. We call him Apple. Apple Mice. He had a brother over there, worked for the Chevrolet garage. And he used to come in to the restaurant all the time, order fried rice. He loved fried rice. And we call him Apple. We got a nickname for him.
Well, and you know, I've talked to a lot of Japanese Americans who were in this area at the time, and I've heard how their life changed, and of course, they got locked up and put behind barbed wire. But I've also heard stories about Chinese Americans being mistaken for Japanese Americans. Is that something that happened to you?
Yes, they did. I was stationed at Camp Cook. I decided to take a weekend pass to go to Santa Barbara. So I took a weekend pass, and I was walking down the sidewalk by myself, and two Marines were walking toward me, and they were talking to each other. I knew they were up to something no good. They were recruits. They come toward me, and they walked me right off the sidewalk. I didn't say anything. I just went off the sidewalk, and that was it. And they turned around and looked at it and started laughing. I said, "Okay." I said, "In case I find you on the battlefield, I'll start laughing at you." Remember what happened. But anyhow, I didn't see those guys anymore. They were recruits.
Well, when did you end up in the Army? And what about your brother? Which one of you went in the service first?
My brother did. He went in the Navy first. And I tried to get in the Navy, but the quota was all filled up. I tried to get in the Air Force, the quota was filled up. So I tried the organization that I really liked, but there was no opening. So I decided, I'm not going to wait any longer. I went down the draft board, told him I want an immediate induction. I want to get this thing over with. So I volunteered, had the draft board take me in.
How did your family feel about that, about you and your brother going off to war?
Well, they had no choice. They knew that we had to do it. We had to go and do our duty. We had to go and show people that we were proud of what we are, so we all volunteer.
I guess that's something I should ask, too. Did you have family in China that you were aware of that maybe had been oppressed by the Japanese?
No, we had, my grandma did, but she lost track of them, but I had no knowledge of them. She didn't say too much, but she always sent money back to the village where she came from to support the family. She tried everything she did financially to help them. She was a good grandma.
I get the sense she had a pretty big influence in your life.
She sure did, man. But she said, jump. You asked how high you jump. Man, she was strict. And that's how we turned out. We turned out real good.
Well, what was it like when you did enter the Army? You said you wanted to get in the Navy or the Air Corps, and it didn't happen, so you're in the Army. Did you have an idea of what they'd do with you?
No, I didn't. In fact, they didn't tell us where we were going after we got our equipment and clothing issued to us at Presidio Monterey. They got us all on this train, and they didn't tell us where we were headed for. So we rode the train for 2 nights and 2 days or something like that. It was a long train ride, and we was going down the southern route, New Mexico, down in there. One morning, we were still sleeping, the train stopped. I said, hey, the train stopped, I told my buddy. Pretty soon, we heard a big military band out there playing Deep in the Heart of Texas. I said, we're in Texas. We landed in Austin, Texas, Bastrop, Texas. That's a small town like Pinedale. Camp Swift, that was a base we were had a basic training. They run the hell out of us, man. We were all 18 years old. And they got us off the train early in the morning, and they had us stand in formation, and they had these 2.5-ton trucks standing by, about 4 or 5 of them, and the sergeant in charge, he had a list, and he hollered out the name, and we say, ho, say, truck one, and call another name, truck two, 3, 4 trucks. So we jumped in the truck. When they called me, they, truck four. I said, what the hell are we in? We're in the Army, but we don't know what outfit. Anyhow, we didn't know. So they pulled guys out, put them on different truck. They shipped them to infantry outfit and engineer and headquarters. When we found out we was a medic, I said, hey, I don't know anything about medics, medicine. You know, the guy said, you soon learn how to do things like that. So we wasn't the medics.
It's time for our first break, but we'll hear what he experienced as a medic in Europe with the 97th Infantry Division when we come back. And before we're done, more of Ray Lee's reflections on reaching the century mark. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.